Welcome one and all, and welcome to episode 403. Yeah, I got the numbers right this time. Of Signals from Mars. And for this episode, we have Jason McMaster on the show talking Igniter, talking horns and hammers, talking all types of other stuff regarding his music, his bands, projects, so on and so forth.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
If you want to hear the interview and just jump to it, it's right at the 5-minute mark, more or less. But I do want to say that any time that you have Jason McMaster on the show, it more or less guarantees that you're going to have a good conversation. And it's always fun to talk to Jason. I think I've had him on the show 3-4 times at this point. And it's always fun. It's always fun to catch up, talk about different bands. He's in so many different bands that there's always something to talk about. So whether it is Horns and Hammers from Igniter, whether it's talking about Watchtower, whether it's talking about San Antonio Slayer, whether it's talking about Cassius King, Dan Lorenzo, I got to mention that band. If not, Dan will come for me. Dan's a good guy. Hopefully I get to interview him in person next summer. We'll see. Anyway, yeah, Jason is fun to talk to, down to earth. And at the end of the day, he seems like a fan, most of all, when he's talking about different bands, when he's talking about his own bands. Yeah, he could showboat and he could say, oh, well, I've done this or I've toured with that band or I've done, you know, he could be a jerk about things if he wanted to. But he's not. He's really down to earth about things and really, really a good conversation, which is fun. He's got his own show, Talk Louder, that we're going to talk about as well. And currently listening to an interview that he did with Michael Wilton, which is really neat. It's always fun to hear somebody from within the actual industry, not a goof like me that's, you know, that I speculate about things, you know, whether something happens or something doesn't happen or whatnot. And I'm the first to admit that, but Jason is on the other side. So he's got insight into things that he's had to go through in his career. And people talk to him in a different manner because of that, because they know that he's been through the same struggles that they have. And he's dealt with a lot of the same things. So it's always fun to hear him talk to different artists. I also talked to him about covers, about getting Mark Lopes and Ross the Boss on their take on a Saxon track, and it all kind of fits in. It's a really neat little piece to the interview. And we also discuss how Jason kind of became the go-to person to fill in with different spots, you know, whether we're talking about San Antonio Slayer, whether we're talking about, again, Igniter or Accept or Armored Saint. You know, those are experiences that not too many people can talk about, filling in for, you know, people like John Bush or even a Mark Tornillo in Accept. So, yeah, so that's an interesting part of the conversation as well. I do want to thank you guys for listening to this episode, and I do want to thank my patrons for all of their support. Go to signalsfrommars.com. It is the one-stop shopping place for anything related to the show, whether it's replays of the video version of this very interview, whether it's other audio podcasts, whether it's merch to help support the show, whether it's Amazon links, so on and so forth, or link to Patreon. You can support for as little as $2 a month. Excuse me there. Anyway, thank you so much once again, and let's jump on into the interview with Jason. welcome everyone to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I am lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Jason McMaster. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Awesome. This is, I think, the third or fourth time you've been on the show in the different iterations of the show over the years. I will always remember a little email exchange that we had when you were releasing a Broken Teeth album, which was called Bulldozer.
Yeah.
And being someone that grew up in a construction family, writing the PR person and saying, that's not a bulldozer. And Your response was, yeah, well, bulldozer sounded better than front loader. So I got it instantly.
Yeah, front loader sounds like a different band. Maybe not. Front loader sounds like something the Mentors would have done or something.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. But we're here to talk about new album by Igniter, a recent album by Igniter, Horns and Hammers. Obviously, there's a new wave of British heavy metal influence going in. In this day and age, we were talking about technology before coming on. How hard is it to say, you know what, we need to keep it in that vein? We've got all these tools at our disposal, but we still want it to sound authentic. We want it to sound like something that came out or was influenced by a specific era.
First off, I think that it's interesting, that even now it's about to be 2025. But for years and years and years now, there has been a demographic that will have it no other way. There is like a power, just to pull a genre, power metal, force, army of some kind, I believe, that camps out in Germany mostly, but globally, battle jackets as far as the eye can see, with nothing past 1987 on the jacket,
right?
In 2025. So there's your constituents. Getting them to buy your record is another topic, but you know what I mean? Because there's a thousand plus, there's a million really bad power metal bands, and I'm not even throwing rocks. I'm just saying, here's another one that sounds just like Igniter, or Igniter's just another one of those bands that just sounds like blah, blah, blah. But here's the deal. I'm an attempt to be humble, right? So if someone hears the new Igniter or an old Igniter record and goes, this just sounds like it. That's right. We're not changing anything. No reinvention. Zero desire to do anything different than what was done on the first few Iron Maiden, the first five Priest, the first shit, even couple of Motorhead records, that you throw the mics up, you write the songs as a band, one room, everybody's cohesive and in one room. And, the term is old school, I believe. Right. And the record's not recorded analog, we're not that.
Right.
We don't have that kind of time, because we're a little long in the tooth and just moving slower. And technology is our friend, is what I hear. Mm-hmm. But, trying to find the right button is usually the chore. And even then, if you're a dinosaur, you eventually find the right button and you can make your record, your song, your tone, your bass, your snare, and sometimes the snare is hard, but you can make the instruments sound the way you want them without spending a lot of money if you can find the right button.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I also wanted to not forget that it does matter who you have in your small army, who's bringing the riffs, because it's human beings pounding on wood and wire.
Right.
That's it. It's cavemen pounding on rocks and sticks, and it's still that. And that's what music is a human creating something from nothing in a room, and then it's recorded eventually, hopefully, you know, and to share and bring a smile, get your heart racing, create an emotion. This is all the right reasons to write a song, make a noise, make it a song, and record it, make 10 or 12 of them, and put it out there as a product, and hope people will join you in that celebration. And that's kind of, I mean, I'm generalizing now, aren't I? It's not just about horns and hammers, but that's pretty much our Bible. And we don't really know how to do it any other way, which is another good thing, you know. Robert Williams, guitar player. He's the youngest member. He's the newest member. I can't recall now because I feel like he's been there the whole time. The lineup, and I mean, I think Igniter has like 9 records out. That's what the press has been saying. And I'm only on 6 or 7 of them. And I think one of them's a live record. So it's, you know, this lineup's, I know these 5 dudes have been in doing this for 10 years now, with 3 records under our belt as this group. And that would be Haunted by Rock and Roll. Then right around the pandemic was the golden age of Black Magic. And now Horns and Hammers. And as we move towards Horns and Hammers, Robert is bringing in even more material. He's kind of beating everybody else. Stuart being really the main songwriter, and Igniter is kind of his creation. Stuart, the Bat Lord Lawrence, is who I speak of. Robert, I mean, half the record or more, he brought in, shit, a few of those tunes he brought in pretty much finished. And then we put an Igniter spin on them, of course. But he's been a plethora of heavy metal energy and fire to what it is. And he loves, you know, Saxon and Manowar, and, you know, he loves that shit. Mm-hmm. So it's coming from the right place. When he brings in a song, it's undeniable. We're not going, yeah, this one's okay. I mean, chances are we're going to take his song and put our spin on it, especially when either mainly me, but me, either me or Stuart come in and write the lyrics for it. It's definitely turning into Igniter when we do that, when we put the patterns and phrases and content in the lyric on top. And also the solos too, whatever Stuart's going to do really does make it sound like Igniter. But Robert knows how to write a really good heavy metal song. And so we're not going to deny anything that the rhythm section, Billy and Pat bring in, or a riff I bring in. Like some of the riffs on Golden Age were mine, and then they just kind of like morphed into whatever else those guys were adding to it. And that's pretty much the answer to your question. I hope I filled in the blanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you touched on a bunch of interesting points, because I was going to bring up the fact that there are a million and one bands trying to fit into this niche of music.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, I don't necessarily like all of them.
Well, that's what,
you
I
know
was,
what I mean?
Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's like the black jelly bean. It's like, you know, you either get it or you don't, you know?
Right. And what you said previously, you start to listen to certain things and you're like, man, I have to listen to this album now to cleanse my palate, because you listen and it's like, okay, I've already heard Saxon do this. I've heard Priest do this. I've heard, and I think with Horns and Hammers, Yeah, you're not reinventing the wheel, but you're making entertaining songs that have hooks, that have structures, that have things to them that are working within a recipe that has your own spin on it to make you want to listen to it, to kind of add it to that playlist where you have other songs that you go back to and listen
to.
That is a
great, slightly unbiased review of the fucking record, Vic. Thank you. It's important for people to realize all of that you just said, because if they don't, if they put it on with their arms crossed and they have their shields up, they're protecting their brain and how they feel like a record or a song or whatever is going to make them feel. Oh, let's see what you got. Hey, you know, I get that too. People are, you know, the gatekeepers are out there. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. There have been a lot of really kick-ass reviews on Horns and Hammers, mm-hmm. but there's a handful of people that I feel, maybe it's just me reacting and kind of smirking and walking away from, I'll just call it a bad review, where, you know, even the writing is not very, very good, mm-hmm. and they're giving you a bad review. But what I love about a bad review, if it's written by, you know, shit, maybe it's AI that's writing the review, I don't know. But here's the point I'm trying to make. If it's very, very well written, I love it. And it makes me want to read the review. If I start reading and go, oh, articulation and perfect punctuation and excellent reasons why this person didn't get it or doesn't like it and may not be a Saxon of Priest and Saxon. Which that lends itself to, if you don't like Priest and Saxon with a little thrash sprinkled on top, mm-hmm. for some pepper, you're not going to dig it or you're not going to like it.
Right.
No complaints here, but some of the reviews, and it's no one's fault, have been real kind of brutal. Mm-hmm. And that's fine too. But I on the brutal ones, I go, man, they just don't like this kind of metal. They're wanting us to do something different, and they didn't see the sign on the door. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even enter the room if you don't like this or that, or if you think, you know, Leather and Studs is dumb, mm-hmm. or you're above it, because there's gonna be some Leather and Studs.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think what a lot of times what happens, there's two points that I want to make. One is people expect to listen to an album and want to compare it with their favorite all the time, even if they're talking about the same band. Mm-hmm. If Killers is their favorite Iron Maiden album, if they say, well, this isn't as good as Killers, okay, fine. It doesn't have that same emotional connection. But it doesn't mean you can't still enjoy it. Nothing has to come along and be the best of. Nothing has to all of a sudden become your favorite for it to be worth anything. You can still enjoy different bands as long as you're saying, as long as it's within a genre or subgenre that you enjoy, then why shut yourself off to it instantly?
Yeah, you've already sort of drank the punch. If you're, I'll just use Iron Maiden, you know, from Number of the Beast to, you know, Power Slave, or to, from, you know, just within an era of the band, I'll bring it home. Igniter, from the last record to Horns, from Golden Age of Black Magic to Horns and Hammers, there's some differences there that are obvious in my opinion.
Right.
But we really didn't write the record differently, or we didn't record it differently. Mm-hmm. We didn't do anything. I feel like, for lack of a better term, we're getting better at, I'm not patting my own back, I'm just saying we're getting better at partial pieces that that are in the toolkit. We're getting better at this, using this horn, and we're getting better at using this hammer. And we had both horns and hammers on Golden Age of Black Magic. Maybe they were in the bottom of the toolkit. Maybe we were using the screwdrivers and the power drill. Who knows? my analogy is silly, but is it? You know, whatever, when you're building a song, when you're writing a song, what is going to make this song different than the last song that you just wrote, even if it's on the same record? Mm-hmm. So, you know, moving on, we're always going to be this kind of a band. It's like, you can't really say that someone else is going to call you out on something good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a review. I don't remember the cat's name or the name of the publication, but, and I related to this review because I'm like this about some of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically saying that the only thing good by Igniter is the first record, Take to the Sky, which came out in 2004, 20 years ago.
Right.
And this journalist, I'll call them, is just waiting for the band to sound like, well, hold the phone. We're not that band anymore. Right. We couldn't even try to be that band. And the reason that, I mean, I'm the replacement singer, so there's a reason that the other singer doesn't want to be there. So right. We can't. So they're obviously creating this downfall of the band. Like, oh man, they haven't put anything out since the first record. And it's just been a downhill, like, you know, just it's just a shit show rolling down the hill. And right. And he was very colorful about certain things, certain ingredients in Igniter that haven't been as good in 20 years. So I can't help this person recreate that because it's impossible to to do that. Now, being that there are fans of this genre out there that are living for this moment in a band's career, mm-hmm. this one thing that this band did is what they fell in love with. That's how I can relate to that. I mm-hmm. feel the person's pain, because there are bands that I feel the same way.
Right.
You know, some people might feel that way about Van Halen's first album.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it just went to shit after, you know, it's like, I get that. I fucking get that. So, you know, maybe a bad example, Van Halen, because they made plenty of heavy records in the early days.
Yeah, but I think to your point, and I believe you guys talked about this on your podcast recently, these are called albums similar to like a photo album, where it's a snapshot of that point in time in your life. Whereas, bingo. As you said, 20 years ago, even the members that were in the band at that time, their lives are completely different. Even the reviewer, I mean, if you look at it objectively, at the end of the day, we're all people, all our lives change, and we're not attacking how we write an article the same way, or how we talk about a certain thing like we did 20 years ago. At least I hope you don't, because that shows that you haven't evolved, you know, or you haven't tried to get better. I don't know.
I understand living in a bubble. I mean, you can tell by the landfill behind me. You know, cassette tapes and there's some laser discs back there. You know, I understand. I do. but it's important to, when you're creating art, you know, it's just not going to be the same, because, you know, if I'm not 20,
mm-hmm.
hell, I'm not even 40, and I'm not even 50. So, you know, not to put rings in the tree, but yeah, it like you already said, it's not where you were, it's where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're still creating something with the you know, what you've gathered along the way, mm-hmm. to put something together that you know you love.
Right.
And these things that you've picked up along the way, you know, let's just keep going with that 20-year span. There's things about Igniter that Igniter has picked up along the way and even let go mm-hmm. along the way, whether we had that choice or not, or the members of the band had that choice in life or not. And not to dwell on this, but I feel like what you have in your, as your intellectual property and things that you've learned and things that still make your heart beat fast about heavy metal or writing heavy metal songs, those are the things, those are the tools I spoke of. Those are the things you're going to use when you put a lyric or a riff or a song or a record together. So.
Yeah, absolutely. How long did it take for you guys to decide on the cover of the Saxon's Machine Gun?
Ah, that was something, again, Robert Williams brought in. That was his idea. I think that it was sort of a whim. I think that, and it was at a really interesting time because Watchtower, we had just played Keep It True, and I came back and I had befriended Mark Lopes from Metal Church over there because Watchtower went on. We were right in front of Metal Church and they were over watching us, and the headliner was Udo's Watchtower, Metal Church, Udo Dirkschneider. So it was just this big, quick cluster of fast friend, you know, and I ran into right. Kurt Vanderhoof at breakfast on our way to the airport, kind of. And I ended up getting his number and getting in touch with Mark. And so I was already fast friends with Mark in a pinch. And then I'm home and I get a text, you know, it's a group text, and Mark's like, I think we should cover Machine Gun by Saxon. And it was like, everyone just chimed in and went, fine. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, fuck yeah. You know, it wasn't, it was just like, oh, that fits exactly where we are on the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this sort of an angry, battle torn old man writing fast heavy metal song, dude, let's fuck yeah. And Mark is a content creator, and he has a company and edits videos and shit all the time. And I wanted him to make the video. And so he made the video, and it was perfect because he's in the fucking he's on right. the song. So, you know, it's like, use your fucking resources, people. And then almost in the same breath, Robert is buddies with Ross the Boss, and Mark sings for Ross the Boss. Right.
Yeah.
Robert just reached out to Ross, and Ross was like, fuck yeah. And I think I wasn't in on that conversation, but I would imagine Robert's like, hey man, your singer's already on this. You might as well throw a solo on it. You know, I would imagine it went something like that.
Right.
So, and that's how it was real easy. It was like kind of the no brainer. And we all love old Saxon shit, you know? So yeah. And they're one of those bands that you can't kill. They've been around forever and they still make great records. And Jesus Christ, they have Brian Tatler in the band now. Right. I mean, if Paul Quinn decides to just stay home and chill for a minute and maybe try some new things, Brian Tatler on board, it's like, wait, what? It's yeah. like adding this new fire to the, you know, that they weren't even looking for it. They feel like they didn't need it. It was just like, hey, Brian, how's it going? Yeah, come on over. We're going to go on tour. So learn these songs. You know, it was like, audition Brian Tatler? No. So anyway, I'm a fan and think it's cool that Saxon is this band that's been around as long as anybody, Priest yeah. and Maiden and anybody. So yeah.
Yeah.
The cover came out really good and it was super fun and it adds something special to, you know, at least controversial, you know, maybe in some platforms. You know, some people say when you do a cover, oh man, no, that's taboo. You shouldn't be doing a cover. It's like, hey man, go for it. You know, have fun.
Yeah, I don't get that. There's a whole backlash on covering songs. You've done cover bands in the past as well, and I've done that myself. And the message I always try to get across is it's just fun. It's fun to go out and play some of these bands. I played in a Misfits cover band for a few years.
Yeah.
And people are saying, well, you're taking time away from other bands and you're taking money away. And I'm like, it's not my intent. I'm just going out, trying to have some fun, play some cool songs. And that's it. Doesn't go beyond that.
I think people, and I'm not telling people what to think. Stay home.
Yeah.
don't come out and see your friends that you've known forever, that you respect, find their smile.
Right.
What's wrong with that? And I feel like playing songs that when you heard them, they gave you an emotional response.
Right.
Like a romantic reaction. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that is part of your, it's called spirit. It's called soul. I think that it can be really fun and cathartic almost, and sort of like you feel a flying, not falling. Mm-hmm. that you're just getting out there with your buddies, doing something, I mean, that's all it was. When you think about, first off, I want to say our favorite bands still do covers.
Right.
Iron Maiden does covers. Saxon does covers. Judas Priest does covers. They still do them live 50 yeah. years into their career. It's not an argument. I'm just bringing up the point. But if you remember when you're a little kid and you got your first guitar, and you and the kids across the street, one guy plays drums, one guy plays bass, and you jump in a garage, you're not really trying to take over the world. And, you just want to be like Kiss yeah. or AC/DC or whatever. And you just want to get together and see if you can start at A and end at Z mm-hmm. at the same time.
Right.
And it's fun. It's like learning how to ride a bike. Once you ride a bike, it's like, oh man, I can ride a bike. All right. And it's the same period in your life. And that's part of what the feeling and the emotional and the romance, that's the most important part about playing a cover song, is there's got to be the right reason why you want to do it first. So.
Right. Yep. Agreed. You're a very creative artist, obviously, with all the different bands that you play in, but you've just tiptoed across episode 200. You're over 200 with Talk Louder.
Yeah.
What type of a creative release do you get from doing the podcast as opposed to writing and playing music?
Not to answer a question with a question, but why is it that heavy metal nerds, when they go to a party or meet out front of the coffee shop or in the parking lot before the gig or after the gig and start talking about albums and bands and records and what's new and what's old and battle jackets or whatever the topic may be, you're either going to clear the room or you're going to attract other nerds.
Right.
And you're going to, next thing you know, there's 10 and 15 and 20 people standing around, high-fiving nerds. It's a hive mind, it's this like vortex of nerd. Now that is what podcasting is in a word, right? Is a nerd fest. Mm-hmm. I mean, years ago, the last thing I would want to do is listen to what I thought was just called talk radio.
Right.
Taking calls and, Dear Abby kind of shit, or there's a guest and they're taking call. I thought it was like watching paint dry. Mm-hmm. But the creator of Talk Louder is one of my songwriting partners, Jared Tootin, who plays guitar in Broken Teeth and produces all the records. He calls during the lockdowns, and he says, I think it was a text message. He goes, hey man, me and my buddy Metal Dave, David Glessner, he says, what do you guys think about doing a podcast? And I was like, fuck a podcast. I was like, I don't know,
Right.
But he goes, no, let me finish. You know how you guys are at a party together or in a room together and you and Dave start nerding out, or, he's talking to Dave, just you and Jason start nerding out on rock and roll or Angus Young tattoos or whatever you're talking about. And you either clear the room or next thing you know, there's 3, 4, 5, 10 people joining in on your conversation or just listening and almost taking notes on the bullshit you guys are celebrating. And he goes, that's a podcast. And I'm like, oh shit, he's fucking right again. And so we just started working on it, and before too long, I mean, if you watch early episodes of Talk Louder, it's funny, and this is, I'm just adding to this for fun. It's fun to watch those because they're fairly almost kind of scripted, and we're kind of like don't really have our flow yet. Mm-hmm. And also I was going to say this, like the cameras are different. The angle is different. And then you notice, you know, it's like, I can't wait to watch which microphone Dave is using next week. Cause every week he would have a different microphone, you know, until we just decided you need the old 58. You need to where we just ended up having the exact same setup.
Right.
For consistency and, you know, how it looks on the YouTube, you know? So, who knew 3.5 years later we'd have a couple hundred episodes and going strong, as they say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a trip, but it's been a lot of fun. I have to say I'm not doing anything physically or mentally to try to not make it turn into work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important that just statement is very, very, very important.
Yeah.
To add, research can turn into work, and confession here, I'm not doing a whole lot of research. Wikipedia page sometimes, or I'll already be a huge fan and I'll just have all kinds of bullshit. And it reminds me kind of just fanboy stuff when, Chris Farland or whatever is interviewing Paul McCartney.
Right. Remember
that time you wrote Let It Be? Yeah. 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 Man, that was awesome. You know, and that's it.
Right.
Kind of turns on that, you know, kind of totem.
Yeah, that's, I think you've nailed it perfectly, because I have a lot of people that, I'm exaggerating. I have a few people that I talk to.
I get it.
On a frequent basis that are, you know, well-known people within podcasting and within other outlets. And they'll tell me, oh, well, you need to get so-and-so on the show, and you need to have more interviews. You need to do this, you need to do that. And then the last few years, I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years.
Wow.
I've kind of, you know, you're my first interview in maybe 3 months. And
Really?
Yeah. In between, it's been just a lot of different discussions on music, nerding out like what you just mentioned. You know, we just did an episode on 1988 where people voted on their 10 favorite albums of 88. And we did a whole countdown based on that. We talk about just different topics or maybe stuff that's in the news. And it's, as you're saying, it's just friends getting together and just remembering why we started to geek out about this form of music. So yes, if I were after, you know, X amount of downloads every time and stuff, I'd probably be going crazy saying, I need to get somebody on every single week. But I'm kind of cool with this, you know, just being able to nerd out and talk about things. Sure. And do things like that. Because I do think at the end of the day, it's therapeutic to talk to
people
about this stuff. And
yeah,
you know, a misconception with a lot of people, a lot of known artists that have tried the podcast, where I think the pitfall has come is they're looking for the big bucks instantly. And they're thinking that, oh, well, I sold X amount of albums 40 years ago. So by me just talking about myself, I'm obviously going to have millions of people listening in. And it's not quite that.
Interesting that that's a premise for their casting.
I've talked to people behind the scenes
where
they've said, oh, I've sold this amount. So I've got to, you know, I'll get advertisers and I'll have this and I'll have that. And it's like, well, it's not exactly that. You know, if you come from what a lot of people don't realize, I think, if you are somebody that has a outlet like an Eddie Trunk had, or like a Jamie Josta, or where there's already a built-in audience that's going to follow you.
Yes.
I've always said, I think there's a 1% that follows you. Those diehards that always come in and you can count on them. So if you have millions of people on VH1 and you can get 50,000, 100,000 people to listen to your podcast.
Sure.
It's easier to sustain that than someone like myself as a music nerd.
well, let's not to turn this into a big thing, but, and I'm not calling Eddie Trunk names, but he's a nerd.
Right.
He's a heavy metal rock and roll nerd. And that's why 100% he is an influencer for heavy metal nerds, use the term loosely, such as you and I.
Yeah.
And he is an influencer for people like us. Mm-hmm. And I call this highbrow tailgating because it's the same thing. You're tailgating. You know, it's like coffee talk, right? It's fucking tailgating, but you're not wasted. You're not out of your mind. You're not losing your mind. You're just conversing about something that you're emotional about. And I think that's what I mentioned, cathartic. You know, it's cathartic, it's therapeutic, it's emotional. You know, when I get to talk to Wolf Hoffman or Graham Bonnet or you know, Ripper Owens or whoever that has this thing about them that, you know, they're not going to start a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a pretty good come in for a half hour, an hour, or if they start having fun and we loosen them up, they stay even longer. And that's what's cool about Talk Louder. We don't, all right, we're going to try to keep this. We don't have much time today. Half the time, Vic, there's, you know what they say? Oh no, let's keep going. I'm having a good time. Yeah. I'm having a good time. That comes from the guest, from the horse's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't happen all the time. And we have low expectations of that to happen, especially with the names that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great sometimes when you get that. And that's the tailgating part. That's the fun part. That's the nerd part. And that's what I feel like Jared was talking about when he created Talk Louder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. Sidebar here. Eddie Trunk is from the same general area where I am from. So as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, he was on a show called Metal Mania on WDHA in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I would stay up on Fridays at midnight to hear Eddie Trunk's metal news. It was a pre-recorded segment, 5 minutes long. And it was, oh my God, I need to hear what he's going to say about my favorite bands.
I kind of nailed it on the head. He's a defined influencer of you, dude.
Wow,
that's a really great, almost like, you know, a boom, like an accolade, you know, a paperweight, but whatever, you know, some kind of substantial reality that here you are, the 12-year-old kid banging on a guitar, riding wheelies down the street, headbanger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got to stay up late and listen to Eddie Trunk talk about Maiden or whatever. It's no different than staying up late to watch the midnight special Kiss is going to be on tonight. It's the same. You know, Wolfman Jack was an influencer because, hey, it's Wolfman Jack. You know, he was trying to get in your head and go, we are rock and roll tonight with Kiss, you know, Aerosmith or whatever it was. And you can't wait until next week. This is the culture. And it's important. And you know what? For people who, I don't want to say are haters or don't understand it because, you know what? I'm kind of a hater because I confessed, you know, I don't want to listen to people talk unless they're talking about Gene Simmons, you know, or whatever, you know, if it's something that I love, this is that's the nerd thing. So if you're not a nerd, you can hang up now.
Right.
I mean, kind of, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would be remiss not to ask you about Cassius King during the episode. Dan Lorenzo, again, I mentioned you've been on the show 3-4 times. I think Dan's been on here twice that amount. I think every time he releases something, he hits me up for...
Does he know that I'm on right now?
He does not.
He just texted me a second ago. I texted him back. Yeah, he was... He's doing the Ozzy's Boneyard.
Okay.
And he sends me excerpts from shit that he's going to say on the, like, it's pre-recorded and he'll send me excerpts. Like whenever he's going to plug something, because, you know, he knows how to sell used cars. He's a salesman. Yeah. He's badass at that. You know, he can write a riff and sell it to you, you know? Yeah. And so he's got something really good for his next Boneyard. And I feel bad. I don't know when it's going to air, but pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the Cassius King records are really fun. And I love that kind of rock. It's not doom and sludge and stoner, but it's when it grows up, it might be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way he writes, that old Sabbath-y, drone-y, kind of like early sludgy Aerosmith riff.
Yeah.
That's the way he writes. And it makes it real easy for me to write melodies and phrases and lyrics on top of that stuff. So we made those Cassius King records. And now he's got me... slugging it out once in a while on a song or two with Patriarchs in Black too.
Right. Okay.
So there's a new Patriarchs coming out at some point, and he's got me on it. There's one song on there. And then I was on the last one as well. That song was called Curse My Name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the new Patriarchs in Black song I wrote with Dan is called Me and My Shovel.
Okay.
Me and My Shovel is what it's called. Basically about an undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
Is there anything beyond this that you think you'll be doing with Dan?
No, there's never been any plan to try to play live.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you're fishing for. There's never been any plan to, and we've made some Cassius King videos, you know, they're just in house, you know, low budget, fun lyric video stuff. And, you know, I feel like the underground sort of like raised eyebrows and, you know, took a bite to check it out. A lot of people have, hey man, I heard this thing you're doing, Cassius, is that what's it called? And I'm like, Cassius King. Yeah. And so, you know, just randomly a year later, you know, 2 years later, people will find out about it and dig it because, it's right up their alley. So the push behind it has been almost null, you know, no real campaign behind it other than Dan, Dan's the salesman here, but maybe, you know, if we did have deeper pockets, you know, throwing a publicist at it to get some more spins and some more sales, would probably be worth it. It would be lucky to break even because it's just the climate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of music that it is and, you know, whatever, but by no means is slouchy because Dan's great and he always has a kick-ass drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And that's important to that kind of metal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else that you have in the works right now?
I'm trying to finish up a record. It's an EP with Dave Austin, ex-Nasty, original founding member of Nasty Savage.
Okay.
Ditto for, I'm writing a record with Jack Frost for his Seven Witches.
Okay.
Project. And, I mean, it's just a matter of time until those records come out. And, you know, I've got one or two more songs for each of those projects, not to, cause they're not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
The Jack stuff is very old school power metal, kind of Sabotage. Big stretch there, right? Sabotage, right, meets Maiden kind of a vibe, which I love that, mm-hmm, which is even very different than the Cassius King vibe.
And then
you keep going, like back to Dave Austin stuff, the Nasty Savage guitar player. I've known him forever. And he likes to write kind of progressive, weird. He loves Watchtower, you know, right. So he likes to, you know, it sounds like nasty, progressive, Nasty Savage riffs, you know, and he's always got those Floridian death metal dudes playing the bass and drums. And I fucking love that. I feel terrible that the guy's name slips my mind right now, but on the DNA, that's what he's calling the project. Dave, it's his initials. Dave Austin has the guy who played on the last like five or six Feet Under albums, okay, on drums. And he's just going nuts. And it's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a cool little mix of people, because everybody knows I don't sing death metal.
Right.
I mean, I could, I guess, but it's not what I do, you know?
Right. The other thing there that I kind of laughed was because you mentioned with Jack Frost, yet another project with Seven Witches, where you're interchanging with Alan Tecchio, who sung on the last Seven Witches.
That's right. And then before that, my fellow Texan, James Rivera from Hellstar, was on Seven Witches as well.
Right.
At Full Circle, and then there's Cassius King is also the Hades connection with Alan. Yeah. And it's pretty weird, the Watchtower thing. And then, but to keep going, there's a new Hellstar record coming out, and I did a cameo on one of the songs on the new Hellstar record. So it's incestuous, and there's no way around that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You're talking about all these projects where they're asking you to sing on. Obviously, I think the last time that I spoke to you, you had done the fill-in spots for Armored Saint. Obviously, you've mentioned already with Igniter that you weren't the original singer, San Antonio Slayer, all these bands.
Except, I did the Except.
That too. That's right.
Yep. And that was like, sort of in a roundabout way, the catalyst for the Armored Saint gig. And it was over 2 years ago, and right, people still want to talk about it. And that's great. And Mark Ternillo has become like this sounds weird, and he might hate this, a little bit of a hero by way of his age. He looks so good, and he's fucking crushing it every night. Mm-hmm. And to have that gig, it's like a second coming for him, because I don't know if he'd been in like a real band.
Right.
Whether it be a replacement singer or not, you know, mm-hmm, for a little while. And then he got a call through some friends at a studio where Peter Baltes and Wolf were working on tunes, and hey, well, let's get a singer in here and jam. Right. And they were fucking around, and then like they hear Mark, and like everybody knows the history. But anyway, Mark has become it's just an awesome story. Mm-hmm. And now they're crushing it. you know, 15 years into the Mark version of Accept is so killer. Yeah. Of like a new fire story, right? You know, if I can look as good and sound as good as Mark does in 10 years, because he's 70 now, I think.
Okay.
It's fucked up. It's crazy. Not that being 70 is fucked up, but like I said, he looks great, sounds great. Mm-hmm. He's a touring, he's a heavy metal singing touring monster. Mm-hmm. And when I grow up, I want to be that.
There you go.
My point, that was sort of a newish thing, like singer becomes ill, can't, or is in danger of making things worse if they continue.
Right.
They get a second stringer to come in, help out, da 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 da. But then it's like, wow, that was really cool, and playing with my heroes and meeting new people and, you know, very little haters, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I was let in by their fans a little bit. That's great. And befriended the guys, and then 6 weeks later, Joey Vera calls. And I'm, wait, what? No, lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place.
Right.
Three times? So, yeah, that thing. Replacement singer, I don't really like that. I mean, I'm even a replacement singer in Dangerous Toys. The band was called something different before me, mm-hmm. but it's still the same guys that were in that band with another singer. It's just I joined and we changed the name, right?
Right.
You know, I guess replacement singer doesn't really work because it was always someone singing before you, whether it be the guitar player or whatever. Even right. Crocus had a singer before Mark Starace.
Right. So. Well, I didn't want to use the term replacement singer. I wanted to kind of steer.
That was all my fault.
I wanted to steer it in the direction of saying being Mr. Reliable, where all of these bands are coming to you and saying, you know what? We need someone in a pinch. We know that Jason is going to kick ass. Let's give him a shot.
Everyone still gets to work that week. The crew gets a paycheck.
Yeah.
The band gets a paycheck. People aren't really even thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought, innocently, going in is like, shit, I have a chance to help out some of my peers and even some people that I look up to.
Right.
This is a great chance for me to not get my foot in the door at all. That's the last thing I'm thinking. It's more mm-hmm. like, oh, shit, these guys wouldn't be calling little old me if they didn't need somebody in a, oh, man, we can't cancel any more shows. We got to mm-hmm. do something now, you know?
Yeah.
That's crazy. To be in that position as a band out on the, you're in the middle of a tour. Mm-hmm. You're not at home where you can think about it with time off. Right. To be considered at all is an honor, and no rehearsal. Show up to the sound check. And that's my rehearsal, three songs. Well, which one of these songs on the set list do you know are you the most shittiest at, Jason? And let's do those for the soundtrack. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. Being like a, paraphrasing, a go-to guy, it was not a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But me knowing the Armored Saint guys for a long, long, long time. And them knowing that I just did the Accept thing prior. And the funny thing is like, you know, just a couple of months after I think I did, or less, after I did the Accept thing, I'm seeing Armored Saint and Wasp in San Antonio as a fan and a friend. And I go back after their set, high five. Hey, man, great set. How you doing? You know, the whole like, oh, I missed you guys. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, dude, accept. You did the accept. Wow, tell us all about that. I bet that was weird. And how'd you pull that off? And blah, blah, blah. So I'm telling him, oh, my God, it was the craziest experience ever. And I'm just giving him the whole nine, right? 9 days later, Joey Vera's calling me. Dude? He's like, dude. And I'm like, no, dude, really? Dude. So weird. 9 days later, after I was just saw John Bush kick ass.
Right.
You know, he's, and you know what's even weirder? That Eastern Seaboard. They're getting there in the fall, this time of year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Seaboard. And they're getting RSV or some kind of upper respiratory or something's drying out their pipes, you know, and they have to start steroids, which causes other problems, you know, whatever their doctor is suggesting. But both of those guys were on the, you know, Mark and John were on the same regiment.
It's
crazy.
Is one crowd scarier than the other one? Or do you, is there, let me phrase it this way. Is there any crowd that you've had to step into where before going out, you were maybe hesitant about fitting in or them accepting you?
I felt stronger and more confident in front of an Armored Saint crowd than maybe just by a couple of waves, not like this entire ocean apart, from the accept crowd, because, well, and here's a couple of things from my side, from the inside looking out, from me personally. For years and years, I use these for cover bands or whatever. You know, I call it my poor man's teleprompter, and it's a binder, a book binder, you know, a notebook, right? And it's got the lyrics printed out, printed, not handwritten, in large font, all capitals, in page protectors, plastic,
right?
You know, and I have a book light clamped on to this. You know, I open the book and throw it on the stage under the monitors and turn on this book light, and I've got a teleprompter that will fit in my backpack, and I can fly with it all over the fucking world. And I've used that for years for just in a pinch kind of gigs. And, oh, we're doing a couple new songs tonight. Well, I'm not quite, I don't know the verses that well yet. I should bring my little thing, right? And I did that forever. I have the tour manager tape it to the stage so the guitar player, when he takes a solo, doesn't kick it across the stage. And I got to chase my lyrics across the stage. Spinal Tap shit. That would have been hilarious. Anyway, when I did accept, I had this poor man's teleprompter. I've upped my game. I did it with Armored Saint. I had this poor man's teleprompter. The second time, which was like, here's that lightning strike again. Since then, I had upped my game. I got new microphone, new in-ear monitors, and I have a different confidence monitor, I was told I should call it.
Okay.
And I like that better. It was the sound man, buddy of mine, Jonathan, that works at a club here, a venue here in Austin called Come and Take It. I love you, Jonathan. You're a badass. He goes, that's your confidence monitor. I see you. You're barely looking at it. You only look at it when you need to. And I'm like, bear hug. You're exactly right. It's basically a laptop that you can turn, that you can view in, you know, it's landscape when it's long, it's vertical, what are they? Portrait, right? And it's big as fuck, and I've got a Bluetooth page turner, and this one transforms and folds up into a briefcase that goes in the overhead bin, and I carry it through the airport like a briefcase. I can do a gig anywhere in the world now with a fucking backpack and a briefcase. It's fucking great. It's great. And, you know, just for you marketers out there, I have a patent on it, but I need someone to help me get this to a reality of what I've described. A teleprompter that folds up into something this big and goes into your backpack or in the overhead bin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, you know, the road crew's got this, hey, this fucking teleprompter weighs 200 pounds. Where you want it? And it costs $2,000. Where you want it? Where you want, is this, you want it right here? You want it over here? No, this thing's like, it's a transformer. So I finally got that figured out and it's just way more pro.
Cool.
Yeah. See, you know, I've learned a lot from just those pinch hitter gigs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The accept gig might've been a little, like I said, like I was beginning to say, might've been a little bit, I'll use a term that kids use, cringier.
Okay.
Than the Armored Saint as far as comfort meter and maybe the haters that might be there, but no one threw anything at me.
Mm-hmm.
And no one flipped me off. That I saw. I have bad eyesight. I think I remember someone standing there with their arms crossed and shaking their head. One of those.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole bunch of them. And I've said this in the press before that I only had to do one headline set list with Accept, and that was in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And that was really fun. And for that sound check, we did the whole set just because I think Wolf wanted to hear what I was going to, you know, what, where I, my strong points. And that was great because, you know, it just felt really good. And it was obvious like, oh shit, man, I'm really messing up that song and that song. Sorry guys. Hey man, you don't know the song. You're going to save our ass tonight. You know, it was very positive like that and forgiving. And I was like, oh, thank God. These guys are fucking just super nice.
Right.
And forgiving is the right word because they know, you know, shit, I'm not sitting on the bus in front of a Walmart tonight. I'm fucking on. I'm working. I'm playing my songs in front of fans. And you're helping us do that. So Mark comes back to the New York and the Jersey dates and we tag team and they create this monster set list where Mark was coming out and he wasn't 100% yet. So they kept me on, you know, the rest of the week, but they created this sort of like wrestler tag team, you know, sort of like set list, which I thought was fucking genius, you know, where, you know, I would sing a lot of Udo things and then he would sing, of course, all the new stuff and then do a couple of Udo. And then I'd come out and we'd do one together, like we do Breaker together and switch verses and such. And then I'd leave and he'd do a couple more. And it was so fun. And we did like three or four of those like that. So I only had to do a full set without Mark even in the building.
Okay.
Just one. The rest of them were me and Mark high five and nerd tag team heavy metal party with two singers, three guitar players. It was great. It was like a heavy metal party on stage.
Right.
And the pictures I have where there's like six dudes on the stage, you know, it's great. Seven. Two singers, a bass player, three guitar players, and a drummer. Seven people on the stage.
Yeah.
Dude, that's cool. That's a heavy metal party. It was like the Lynyrd Skynyrd of metal. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Could you envision doing something like that with all the various projects that you've been involved in over the years where you do a McMaster Fest? And wow. just for one night, you get all these musicians together and play music from throughout your history.
The only time I've done anything that's remotely similar is there was a cancer benefit for a buddy of mine, Steve, and he's doing great, by the way. And this was many, many years ago, but I had like a Kiss cover band for a little while. We were five piece. I played bass and I split all the vocals with a lead singer who did most of the Paul stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did most of the Gene stuff. And, but we would do the harmonies together and all that. But we had two guitars and a drummer as well. Right. So, that was called Sick, just Kiss spelled backwards.
Okay.
That was on the bill. My band Broken Teeth was on the bill. And Dangerous Toys got up and did like three or four songs at the end of the night, you know, which is what really sold the ticket, you know.
Okay.
And there was another, I want to say another one of my bands or another band. Oh, I know what it was. It was a project that two or three of the other Dangerous Toys guys had. I can't remember the name of it now, but they played as well. And I wasn't involved in that. Okay. And then I think Scott from Dangerous Toys had his band. I think they were called Monster Rod at the time. They got up and played like 30 minutes or something. So it was really close to a McMaster Fest, and me and my friend spearheaded the whole thing. And it was really fun. But I think I was on stage like 5 hours that day.
Right.
It was crazy.
Could you be able to pull something like that off in 2024, 2025?
For a good cause, I would do it. But I think it would hurt. I think my back and my voice, would probably be a little tired. But, you know, if I paced myself and, you know, we were running like donation buckets around the audience the whole time.
Okay.
But it was a great success. So I think that I'd be into it if it was something for the right cause. Yeah. But just as a go-go, no. It would have to be for a reason. There would have to be a good reason. Right. Because I don't even do like Broken Teeth opening for Dangerous Toys. I don't do that.
Right,
it's
right.
Just
right.
Conflict of interest. You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone wants to keep up with you, the best spot is still the website.
Yeah. There's a feedback forum, like contact. You just click that and you can send me messages that way. I'm easy to find. Facebook seems to be, you know, Facebook Messenger seems to be the way most people get a hold of me. And, you know, I appreciate that everyone's really cool about that and not so clingy or, you know, bug out on me or anything. So,
right.
But I'm easy to find.
Okay.
Yeah.
As far but, as
dangeroustoys.us. JasonMcMaster.net, igniterband.com. JasonMcMaster.net has a lot of friendly links. Probably not all of them work all the time, but that's a good start if it's just something specific. But, you know, the SA Slayer stuff coming up, there's no way for people, there's no SA Slayer link for them to contact me, but I know that Don Van Staveren, the bass player, is taking calls for that via his socials. So,
okay. And if people want to pick up Horns and Hammers or any other release, where should they go?
Igniterband.com for the Horns and Hammers record. They're now taking orders for the, I call it the Revolt Vinyl version. It's a CD, but the label is called Revolt Vinyl Records.
Okay.
.com is where you would go to buy the version that actually has Machine Gun, the Saxon cover on it.
Mm-hmm.
But Igniter, we are selling the import version domestically at igniterband.com.
Okay.
Where that has the bonus track on that is actually a live version of a song that was on a previous record called Hell Shall Be Your Home, recorded live in 2020, January 2020, right as the shit was hitting the fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was previously released that year as well on our own little label, just independent. as a live record called Before the Plague, appropriately titled Before the Plague. And it's our last live gig that we didn't even know was being recorded live digitally, right. You know, with stems and everything. And we mixed that and put it out, and it was a good vehicle for us to release a cover of a Scorpions cover, Virgin Killer, which Metal on Metal, the Euro label, the European label that we've been with for a few records now, and they're great. They don't really like to release our cover songs on the issues that they put out on Metal on Metal. So we usually do an independent and put the cover on it, whether it be a live record or we save it or we just do it as a single or whatever. But we had Machine Gun this time, and once again, Metal on Metal doesn't want the cover. And we're like, well, we're going to release it on another label domestically. And they're like, that's fine. Eventually, this domestic version with Machine Gun on it will be on vinyl, colored vinyl, with some goodies stuffed inside. And so be on the lookout for that. So again, that's revoltvinylrecords.com, and they can pre-order their, the CDs aren't in yet as far as that version with Machine Gun, but you can do, they're taking pre-orders for that. And currently you can buy as many copies as you want of the import version for a domestic price, you know, 13, 14 bucks or whatever, from igniterband.com.
Okay.
And the Shattered Crosses video is out. It's doing well. In like 14 days, there's over like 3,000 views. And that's a lot for us, you know, because we're just another power metal band in a sea of power metal bands. So please check it out, Igniter Shattered Crosses. And there's also the Machine Gun video, which features Ross the Boss and Mark Lopes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. And anything you can tell us about Talk Louder, any upcoming guests that you're
I'm excited. Our upcoming guests I can talk about here is we had this guy Crusher Jewel, and Crusher Jewel is an artist. He created the Kerrang logo. He worked for Kerrang in the art department. Really cool stories. You know, the Ozzy Osbourne that has looks like Static, that was on Diary of a Madman and all, he created that.
Oh wow.
He's awesome. And he did a lot of tour book layouts for a lot of, like, he did a couple of Iron Maiden tour program layouts. And this is during his time with Kerrang. Tons of album cover stuff. Ozzy, him and Ozzy and Sharon, you know, a lot of stories there. We did an episode about Ozzy's Hall of Fame. They're two separate from the Crusher Jewel. We did a year-end wrap-up, which was really awesome, where we go through a lot of our favorite guests that we had this year, 2024. We had Claudio Bergamon, who did the album cover for Igniter, which I never really answered your question about deciding what to do, you know, what to use as the album cover. In a pinch, we talk about the Igniter album cover in this upcoming episode with Claudio Bergamon, the artist, who is infamous for doing Judas Priest Firepower. Also, he did both of those Cassius King album covers.
Right. Okay.
He doesn't use any AI. He uses digital drawing, but illustrations, I should say.
Right.
But in photographs, but he's still drawing from scratch, you know? We talk about his process, but that episode is more about AI, and specifically we talk about the new Igniter Horns and Hammers art. The character is on that Horns and Hammers record is sort of created out of sort of after the fact from the lyrics from the title track, and Imperial Bloodlines is a song there that inadvertently helped me sort of have a vision of this really fucked up child of incest who's now a captain in an army for the king's men, for a general that very well could be like his grandfather, you know, who fucked his mom, and you know what I mean? Just all kinds of crazy, you know, who was his bad sister, you know, Game of Thrones shit, you know, crazy shit. And he's angry and he's upset and he's depressed and he's a born machine of a murderer for the king's army, you know. Mm-hmm. And I needed this emotional face, and Claudio nailed it. And it really is about the guy's face and then just the bleakness of the battlefield behind him in the dawn, you know, and that's the art. And I think that Claudio fucking nailed it. And you don't really, if you read the lyrics in this, in the album, and you look at the album cover, which is exactly what we're supposed to do as nerds,
right?
Is worship the album cover while you're listening to the record and read the lyrics and read who produced the record and who played what and who drew the cover and blah, 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 blah. If you totally get into it, and this process is called the ritual. Mm-hmm. If you practice the ritual, you will start to feel that guy's pain. And that guy has eyes and he's on the album cover and he's looking at you. Back to the Talk Louder. We fucking interviewed Nick Bocott.
Oh, wow.
So good. So great. And we just, you know, we were fanboying at the beginning and then we're just high-fiving friends, dudes, by the end of it. And he was on for like an hour and a half just shooting the shit.
Wow.
So awesome. And then we have Michael Wilton from Queensryche.
Okay.
And he was just awesome, of course. But that's Talk Louder, and that would be, I think Michael Wilton will technically be our first 2025 episode.
Okay. Is there any guest who is like a fantasy guest that you'd love to have on the show?
Oh, my God. Been able
to interview yet?
Too many to mention. Number one. Rob Halford.
Okay.
Number one. And I don't really have a number two. You know, I just really think that having him on the show, and I mean, I just want to give him a hug. I've read his books. Mm-hmm. I've toured with him, but I was too scared to, you know, have a face-to-face.
Right.
The closest thing I got back in 91, when the Toys were on the, well, it would have been the last run of Painkiller dates for Priest. Mm-hmm. That would have been the second release for the Toys. But it was Metal Church and Motorhead and Alice Cooper, the Hey Stupid album for Cooper.
Right.
Maybe Blessing in Disguise or Human Factor was the hit, I think, for Metal Church. Mm-hmm. 1916 was Motorhead. Okay. Yeah. So I talked to his manager, his personal assistant, talking about Rob Halford.
Right.
And I go, hey, sort of in between songs, can I just be a fly on the wall and come hang out with y'all? And his like, dojo on the side of the stage, you know,
right?
And he's like, let me ask him and see. And you know what, he was totally cool, you know. He comes back an hour later and he was like, Rob says, come on, man, come on. So in between songs, Rob, you know, there's a big solo or it's the big breakdown in one of the songs or whatever, and I'm literally from, you know, this far away from Rob and I'm just going, oh my God. You know, and I can't talk to him, and they're busy. He's changing his jackets and such. And I'm like waving at him and he's like, hey man, you know, but I didn't talk to, you know, hey, he's in his, right. he's at work.
Yeah. You know?
Well, that's as close as I got.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just love what he's done for all of us, mm-hmm. you know? And Lemmy, I got to sort of befriend Lemmy, but isn't he just the best interview? You've seen interviews. He's the best. He's the best. Just chilling. He can talk to a snake, you know.
Right.
And I don't really have another one. I mean, anybody in Priest, anyone. new guy, old guy, whatever. I think that people that are carrying the flame for something that I fell in love with when I was a kid, that's still doing it.
Right.
As I've watched my friends and my family grow, and they've watched me grow, the people that have been in my life the whole time from afar, that I just, the artists, you know, that I've got my claws and my teeth into and like follow around and celebrate daily for, you know, half a century.
Mm-hmm.
Any one of those I would love to have on my, and some of them are even sort of peers now. It's fucking right. Weird. But Rob is like this unicorn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Steven Tyler, you know, the big boys would be Steven Tyler. Yeah. You know, I don't know what he's doing, but he might have some time now. Because Aerosmith's kind of done, aren't they?
Right. Supposedly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But in, you know, big influences is who I, you know, I like to talk to singers because I like to hear their technique and hear them describe it, you know, because every singer is different. And in that matter, every guitar player is different, really. Right. Your tone is in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And a singer, your tone is your tone.
Right.
You're an individual, you know. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So no, sorry, my answer was a bit lame.
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. Anyone
who has a nerdy heavy metal podcast is gonna say Rob Halford somewhere, you know.
Right.
I gotta have Rob Halford on here, you know.
Yeah. Well, many of the people that you've mentioned, I mean, same deal. So I get it. I understand.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Cool. So I appreciate you spending all this time with me today.
I had a blast. I had a great time, man.
Yeah, me too. It's always fun to talk to you, and anytime you want to come back and nerd out and talk about more music.
Yeah. And anytime that you like hear something, or I wonder what Jason would do or anything like that, just set it up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I'll be here.
Cool. Well, again, I appreciate your time and look forward to hearing all the stuff that you mentioned that's going to be coming out. And want to encourage everyone to check out the Igniter album. It is really good. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, sir.
Of course.
All right. See you.
See you, man.
Cool. So that ends our interview with Jason McMaster. Awesome talking to him once again. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview, and we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.